Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talking some baseball as we kick off the second half of the season from MLB Network. The great Harold Reynolds joins us here. We appreciate his time on 97.3 The Fan. Harold, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing it, man. How about yourself?
We are good, definitely good, despite the fact that the Padres kind of stumbled out of the gate in the second half. I know that you were one of the guys that was kind of on the Padre wagon a little bit at the All-Star break. Are you jumping off that quickly, or are you going to be all right and see if they maybe turn it back around?
Man, I heard my seatbelt go snap, snap, started getting loose today. I got to keep the seatbelt going while the car is going, though. If they stop and keep slipping, I'm going to have to hop out real quick.
Yeah.
No, I have the Padres. I think what they're doing is great. I'm hoping they'll make some moves here and continue to hang on. But, no, I was dead serious. I think they're a playoff team. I think they got a shot. You know, I know they're probably about, in their minds, maybe 2 years out, but I think you're knocking on the door real quick.
Harold, I want you to put your scouting hat on for a second. I think most of us here in San Diego knew Fernando Tatis Jr. was coming, but I don't think anybody anticipated that he would be coming at the level that he's come at. And put your scouting hat on for a sec. What do you see the ceiling? What do you see the comp being for him when he reaches that max potential?
Well, I think all you got to do is just look to his right every night, and right. And he's looking at Manny Machado. I mean,
wow.
That's what I saw when I started looking at him last year. He's at the Futures game, and when he was taking infield, that's the closest thing I've seen to Manny, you know, since Manny. And when Manny was in high school, I've been doing the draft now for 11 years. So my draft video on Manny, my breakdown was Alex Rodriguez, and he looked just like A-Rod in high school. So you're talking about three guys that are pretty good players, and I think Tatis is right in that. He's in that conversation. You know, he's not quite fully there yet, but I think at the end of the day, we're going to be talking about he's one of the great players that came around.
Yep, I think everybody's hoping you're right. Harold Reynolds is with us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Major League Baseball second half of the season underway now, and trade deadline coming up. The Red Sox already went out and got Andrew Cashner, a former Padre. Harold, what other names do you see being moved at the deadline, or what are some of the players we should be keeping an eye on over the next few weeks here?
Well, I think this is going to be real interesting because there's only one trade deadline. You know, I always thought that was strange. Anyway, we have a trade deadline and somebody gets traded a day later, you know. But with the waiver rule and all that before. But now this is it. You know, you got to make your move. So here's what I think is going to be real interesting. One, you're going to see clearly pitchers like Trevor Bauer, and you're going to hear Bumgarner and maybe Greinke and different names like that that'll be out there because everybody wants to win it now. But you're also going to see some teams line up for next year or the year after and be able to make that move right now. That's going to line them up. So I think you're going to see guys getting ready not only for 19 but for 20 and 21 during this period of time. I mean, let's say the Indians decide to break this whole thing down. What are you going to do at shortstop with Lindor? You know, he's got 2 years left. And maybe somebody gets crazy and says, you know what, let's make our shot right now because we're not going to be in that mix next year for him. You know, so I just think that we might see some moves that we shake our heads at the end of the day on the 31st, but you got to look at it and go, well, they made that move for 2 years from now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You could
see a lot,
a lot of teams are doing that.
Start making their moves a couple years in advance. Let's bounce around the league a little bit. Last night, saw a really good game in the Dodgers and Red Sox. Watching this Red Sox team, they seem to be kind of a mystery to me. I can't quite put my finger on why they aren't. Now, it'd be a little bit insane to expect the same type of production they got last year because they were tremendous. But this team hasn't performed nowhere near that level this year. What do you see being the issue with the Red Sox? Why are they struggling so much this year?
Well, I think to me, I think it, you know, they got smarter than than they actually are. You know, they decided they were going to have this whole, we'll push everybody back in spring training. And you look at Chris Sale, and he didn't pitch a meaningful, really his first start was March 15th. And that's, you know, the season's getting ready to start in a week, and he's getting his first start of the spring. You know, and before you know it, he's playing behind the eight ball. And I think that's the example of this whole club. Seems like they've been pushing a ball uphill the whole season, and it's hard to play that way.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, you know, the smartness of overthinking part on my mind is that, yes, they played deep into the World Series, and so they wanted to get smarter and give some guys some rest and stretch them out. At the end of the day, work is work.
Yeah.
You got to go to spring training and get ready for the next year. And if you run out of gas at the end, you figure it out. But to start behind the eight ball, that's a hard thing to do. And they play catch-up all year long with everybody else, and I think it's shown. That's why they've been so inconsistent.
How about on the other side of the field, the Dodgers, Harold? Do you see anything different to suggest that this year they can finish on top, or is baseball's playoffs so hard to predict just because of the nature of the short series?
Yeah, baseball's hard, man. I mean, look, they went game seven twice in a World Series and lost.
Right.
Or right there knocking on the door to two teams that were really good. So just to get to the World Series is difficult. I do like the fact that Kershaw looks like he's healthy and coming back. Ryu's better than he was last year. Their starting pitching's better. You know, last year they relied a lot on that bullpen to get them through. I think their starting pitching is going to take them deep. But also you're a year older with your players. You know, they're a year older with the lineup, and those guys understand it. Cody Bellinger's not near the same player he was last year, you know, so he's been able to figure it out. And, you know, just different things. I think they're a really good club. They're going to be tough to beat. They're going to run away with the West. They're going to continue to do this. But the playoffs are going to be tough because you run into that monster team that's set up just for postseason. Like, let's say the Nationals get in, and all of a sudden you face Scherzer and Strasburg and Corbin, and they're all on their game. And bye-bye, you know. So that's the craziness of our game. And as bad as I talked about the Red Sox, what happens if they get in and they play hot for 3 weeks? You know, they could win it again. So that's the beauty of baseball. And marathon is one thing, but built for the short stretch. And the Dodgers, I think, are built for both, but I think this trade deadline is going to be huge for them because I still think they got some holes that can take it all the way to the end for them.
Yeah, that bullpen seemingly always pops up right around the playoff time. I wonder if they'll finally address it this year. And you know it's on their mind because, you know, reportedly they were in on Kimbrel before he ended up signing and going elsewhere. Let me ask you a little bit about this wild card race, because one of the most interesting things I found about the All-Star game was really the media day, because you got to hear some candid thoughts from players around the league. There are some players who feel like there are teams that are just absolutely not trying. I think we can all identify them. No need to name them. But when you look at the wild card, at least in the National League, everybody other than the Miami Marlins are in this thing. This is good for baseball, I would assume. Why is it that the stigma still, from some of the player standpoint, that there are a lot of teams still out there trying to lose baseball games?
Well, I don't think anybody tries to lose. I mean, throw a ball 95 at somebody, see if they're trying to lose. You know?
Touche.
That'll end that real quick. So I think every player sits there and says, hey, I got a chance to win tonight, compete. But clearly there's some clubs that are better than others, that are more suited. I just said, some teams are going to set themselves up for 2 years from now and not about 19. That's just part of the process.
Right.
But I do think the wild card, with the two wild cards, changes everything. You ask those people up in Seattle if the wild card means anything after they haven't been in the playoffs since 2001. You know, it does.
Yeah.
And so I think what happens is you kind of play through the season and you wake up and you go, man, we're knocking on the door.
Yeah.
You start looking at the Angels, all of a sudden, who are supposed to be out of this thing, they get hot. And next thing you know, they got a chance of finally getting the playoffs. They've only been there one time in Mike Trout's run. So maybe they're going to overturn some apple carts and see if they can get in. So we'll see. It's easy to say that early in the year, but when it gets down to the nitty-gritty where we're at, I think everybody starts to get that playoff taste and that bug, and you start to see them do some things. You know, you look at the trade the Pirates made last year to give up those two guys that are now all-star pitcher and a player in Meadows, and I can't remember the pitcher right now off the top of my head.
Glasnow?
These two were Glasnow.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you give those two guys up for Archer, and that was the Pirates saying, we got a chance, you know, and you give these guys up. So when you get down to that playoff run, you start getting that taste, you deviate from your plan. You sit in all those meetings, guys, we're 2 years away, don't make that move. And then all of a sudden, somebody walks in and goes, we got a shot, I want again. And the owner changes everything.
Yeah.
So that's what's fun about the second wild card. So I get why some people say some teams are not in it and some of the players believe that. But I've been around and I've watched it where it looks like there's no hope, and then that little glimmer, and the owner goes in there and says, let's blow it up. Let's go. Let's make that move. And that happens.
Yeah, definitely seen it in the past. Harold Reynolds is with us from MLB Network. Harold, one more thing. Appreciate your time, as always. Over the weekend, we had one combined no-hitter and one near-combined perfect game. Is that what baseball's come to now, where we can maybe have almost have the first perfect game combined in the history of the league, because we have the openers now and so many strange things with the way managers handle pitching staffs?
Well, sadly, I think we're at that point, and I'm surprised we have not had more.
Yeah.
The Angels thing, will set that aside. That's just an amazing story itself. But Tony can tell you, you know, think about spring training, man. You see three or four different pitchers in one game. You walk home shaking your head. That's what we're getting to. The challenge is you can't do it over 162 games. Right. The arms just don't hold up. So you may get lightning in a bottle every day and a day or so. But we watched the Brewers last year go through the playoffs like that.
Yeah.
And it's more of a playoff tournament baseball recipe than it is a Major League Baseball long season. The thing I worry about is, do you lose the matchup? You know, you look at the All-Star game. We were lined up for Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander to start. I'm like, yeah, I'm all in. Next thing you know, we're flipping the coin trying to figure out if Brad Hand might start the game.
Right.
You know, hold it, time out. You know? So those are the things that I hope we don't get away from. You still want those great marquee matchups that sell the game.
Yeah, I agree.
No,
I mean, I knew you would kind of feel that way, because we always talk to you about some of the old school baseball that they want to get away from. I'm not even going to ask you about what's going on in the Atlantic League. We'll save that for another visit.
Lord,
down the road.
Mercy.
Please, no kidding.
Yeah.
Hey, Harold, thanks so much for your time, as always. We really appreciate it. Fun catching up with you, and look forward to chatting again a little later in the season.
Thank you, Harold.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, you got it. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you, Harold.
Take care.
It's now time for the most unpredictable, most wacky, most opinionated segment of the show.
I wouldn't brag.
Gwen and Chris talk about the best of the rest.
Great balls, you player!
Ooh, with a twist.
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
The Big Five begins right now.
Don't panic, but there's absolutely nothing to worry about.
On 97.3 The Fan.
All right, real quick, Chris, I'm going to ask you a trivia question that Braden Suprenic gave us.
Okay.
And we're not going to spend much time on it. Who was the leadoff batter the last time the Padres had a winning record in the second half?
In the second half?
Of the season. No, am I wrong?
You're wrong.
Okay.
Going into the break.
Going into the break. That's what it was. I didn't write down. Okay, just please answer it. I feel stupid.
You are.
Okay, thank you. Do you know?
Yeah, Anthony Quinn.
No, that's actually not it.
It's not?
Anthony Quinn Jr.
Oh my
goodness.
He's being funny.
He's so funny.
Wow, that's pretty good. I did not think Chris would... I'm not doubting your knowledge, but that's so random. Who would know that?
Why is that random? The last time the Padres had a record over 500 at the All-Star break was the magic year of 2010.
That's true.
Indeed.
And I believe that our friend Tony Gwynn Jr. was a star on that team.
He was.
And I can't imagine asking the question if anybody other than him was the leadoff hitter.
Okay.
Right. It would have been real random then.
Yeah. That's true. All right, take us to your big five, girls. Go to number five. The NBA is going to implement a coaches challenge at the upcoming summer leagues and anticipates using the rule during the 2019-20 regular season as part of a pilot program, per a memo sent to teams this morning reported by ESPN. Coaches are going to get one challenge a game. They lose it if the challenge, and they will lose it even if the challenge is successful. They can use it to challenge any called fouls, goaltending, basket interference, and plays when the ball is knocked out of bounds. Coaches must have a timeout. The team must call a timeout immediately after the event it would like to challenge. And here's my favorite part. And the coach must, quote, twirl his or her index finger toward the referees. Like, that's the version of the red...
They've been watching a lot of baseball. That's what they've been doing.
That's the version of the red flag, is the twirling of the finger. Sounds like, maybe, switch it up. Oh, no, I didn't want to challenge that. No.
Right?
That could be an issue.
Better get your play calls different.
If the challenge is successful, the team retains the timeout. But if the challenge is unsuccessful, they lose it. So similar to the NFL.
So you just get one challenge.
One challenge per
game.
So Chris, will this be a good thing for basketball, or will it become a nuisance to fans?
Both. It will certainly become a nuisance to fans. That I am sure of.
They already take too much time.
Just like all replay has become a total nuisance to fans, except for those fans who believe that the world has to be
perfect,
adjudicated perfectly.
Good point.
Anybody else understands that replay is a pain in our side that is never going to go away? As a matter of fact, it's getting worse and worse and worse. This is the first step for the NBA down the dark hole of a path that will lead them to basically challenging every single call that's ever made in an NBA game and ruining the game forever if they're not careful. Because baseball is one thing, where you got a ball, either it's fair or it's foul. Basketball, almost every call is a judgment call.
Yeah.
So are you you're telling me that you're going to allow them to, once a game, be able to go back and look at a judgment call? How can you judge a judgment call, even if you look at it again? I just think this is awful. I hope the NBA doesn't go through with it, but I know they're going to.
Tony?
Initially, my mind is trying to be open to this, and it's like, okay, one challenge a game, save it, cool. But I already know how we are as a society. The moment that one call is, that one challenge has been used, and there's a play at the end of a game that we look in super slow-mo, slowed down 13 times, and we realize, oh, it should have been this, man. Oh, we got to open it up a little bit more. It's just going to, it's a slippery slope, as Chris said, and it will, I just don't trust us. I don't trust us to not freak out now that there is, now that they're going to try out this challenge system. I don't trust fans and people who watch the game to not freak out when there's a call that is not made correctly, which literally happens every game, and we've all lived with it to this point.
There are so many calls in a basketball game.
Don't ruin my beautiful game of basketball.
Yeah, there's so many calls in basketball. Just move on. I mean, honestly, I could see somebody like Greg Popovich showing how ridiculous this is
by
challenging the opening tap as to whether or not the guy in the other team tapped the ball too soon.
That'd be great.
You can challenge anything, and it's going to wreck the game. Sorry.
All right, let's go to number four.
Number four.
A Florida tennis prodigy became the youngest player to ever qualify for Wimbledon in the Open era yesterday. Corey Goff, who is 15 years old, defeated Belgium's Greet Minnen in a match 6-1, 6-1 to accomplish the feat. The tournament, the Wimbledon tournament, that is set to begin July 1st. Tony, what were you doing when you were 15 years old?
When I was 15 years
old. Not qualifying for Wimbledon.
Definitely. I wasn't qualified for very much anything at 15. I was pretty average, man. Like 15, I think I was a sophomore going as a 15-year-old. So I was playing, getting an opportunity to play varsity basketball, but that's pretty much where my stardom ended at that point.
Chris, what were you doing at 15 years old?
I was on the high school baseball team.
Nice.
That's about it.
Chris,
what are most 15-year-olds are doing at that point?
Yeah, I was just playing, learning how to pitch a little bit, learning that I couldn't hit and that I better be able to pitch a little bit because I was never going to make it in any other position. I think I was also writing for the school newspaper.
Oh, nice.
And anyway, I think the real question here is 15, really? Do we need that?
I didn't want to ask that.
I know. It's kind of the obvious one. But Venus Williams, I think, qualified as a pro 16. At 13 or 14. Okay, 13. Even. She was playing pro tournaments. So, you know, it's getting earlier and earlier nowadays, but these kids can handle it. I mean, the kid earned his way into the tournament. It's not like he's been given a spot like they do in golf tournaments once in a while.
Sponsor exemption.
I mean, he earned his way in, so whatever age. It's one day some kid who's 12 years old is going to win Wimbledon.
Yeah.
Okay, well, one
Does
day.
Does that change it a little bit then?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
One day a 12-year-old's going to win Wimbledon.
Wait, what?
I almost think that's going
to. That would be crazy.
Why would that be crazy?
A 12-year-old winning Wimbledon?
I'm calling it right now.
That would be insane.
Calling it!
That would be nuts.
I'm stunned. Let's move to number three.
Number three.
Tracy Austin almost won the U.S. Open once at like 13 or 14.
That is insane.
I think she got to the final. I mean, it was close.
You're not even done growing yet, and you're winning Wimbledon? I broke the news to you yesterday about Yonder Alonso being designated for assignment by the White Sox, but now the team finds themselves in a weird spot. The news of his assignment came less than 2 hours after the team sent out a release promoting his charitable bowling event.
Uh-oh.
Set to be held on Sunday, benefiting the Boys and Girls Clubs of Chicago and the Chicago White Sox Charities. Other members of the White Sox are scheduled to appear at the event, but at that time, they will be ex-teammates. So they will no longer be his teammates because he's not on the team anymore. Chris, what should the White Sox do about this event?
They should fold up the organization.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
The White Sox are a mess.
That is pretty bad.
Yeah. No, what are you going to do? I mean, these kinds of things happen. I think it's great.
Can you hold it? The guy's not on the team anymore.
Well, of course he can.
But it's not about that. Though.
Yeah. I mean, of course he can hold the event. And I would hope that his quote, former teammates, many of them would still come.
Hopefully.
The White Sox, I guess, probably don't have to devote as many resources to the event as they might have originally. But, I mean, if he put something like this on and he's worked on it, I hope he still goes out and has the event for no other reason, just for the kids and everybody else that would get to take part in it and get a chance to meet a former big league ball player. That might be a big league ball player again, by the way. I don't know that this is the end of the road for Yonder Alonso.
For people out there, I mean, now that I've been around it a little bit, it's a lot of work for these athletes to come up with these events because there's a lot of scheduling and all that. But, Tony, what do you think?
I'm going to read this part to you guys real quick. Benefiting the Boys and Girls Club of Chicago and the Chicago White Sox Charities. I think Alonso will go, ultimately. But doesn't it feel a little weird that you fired a guy and somehow, I mean, listen, in some sense, if this is his charity, he's got to go, right? Like, he's got to show up. But if this is for the White Sox and you just fired me, basically.
Why do I want to help you?
Yes, but at the same time, it kind of puts him in a rough spot. It's like,
why do I want to be a jerk to these kids?
Exactly. So I think he'll go ultimately.
I know what you would do, Caribbean. You would
jerk.
Leave all the kids hanging.
Oh, he'd be a Caribbean jerk?
And you wouldn't even announce it either. You just wouldn't show up. All these
I
kids
would never.
All these poor kids would be standing there with these bowling balls in their hand waiting for their hero to show up. And you just would.
So you're saying if the fan
just
fired
blow
me
them right off.
And I had a charity event and they sent it out saying, and they still
and
asked
you
me,
knew that it benefited
the
fans,
Boys and Girls Club,
the fans' charities.
I'm out.
You're definitely not.
No, actually, I'm contacting all those kids and I'm saying, let's go to Chuck E. Cheese over here.
I can see you doing that
because then we're going to go celebrate over
here. That's super petty, but I can see you doing that for sure.
All right, let's move on to number two.
Number two.
10 former elite players, including United States national team icons Michelle Akers and Brandi Chastain, have signed on to take part in a first-of-its-kind study on the long-term effects of head impacts in a high-level women's soccer. Akers suffers from chronic migraines, and Chastain actually became the first professional woman athlete in 2016 to pledge to donate her brain to the Concussion Legacy Foundation for study upon her death. Tony, how much of a problem is concussions in soccer?
It's always been a problem. It just has not been written or reported on as much as
the number one sport in America, which is football.
And then they try to sweep it under the rug.
You know, and yes, and football did try to sweep it under the rug. But I think, listen, when you start researching these things, you generally find information that you did not know before. Although, because of football, I think there won't necessarily be things we don't know. We pretty much know what causes head trauma, right? This is maybe a little bit less, considering that you're not 225
running. I've headed a ball before. It hurts.
Right. But my point is,
I don't think that's the main
is
spot
it hitting
to get
heads?
Injured.
Yes. It's exactly on the headers when you get two heads basically colliding at times.
Yeah, that's a pretty severe injury,
and
especially
that,
they're not wearing any helmets.
Just getting raised, they're not wearing any helmets or really any pads other than the shin guard. So when you do have collisions when they're actually running into each other, I think it's interesting that two icons from that 90, from the 99ers, as they call them, are you know, heading this right
now.
Do
you
now.
You have daughters that play soccer. Does this worry you?
Yes and no. I mean, listen, I think anytime your kids are out playing a sport like soccer or things that have to do with your head, you always got to have a little bit of caution and concern, but they love to do it, so I'm not going to take
Aren't
it away from them.
Aren't they not allowed to head the ball at a certain
My
age?
My oldest daughter just got to the level where you can now head the ball, but I think it's prior to the age of 11. You're not allowed
to. Not even supposed to. I think they're going to have to change that and move that up to about 15 or 16 until really kids have better control of their bodies and are able to go up and really understand how to head without hitting heads. Because that's a more severe injury to me almost than a wide receiver going over the middle. I mean, two heads just completely colliding
with
no helmet.
Protection, yeah.
I mean, that's dangerous. And I don't think people look at soccer as being dangerous, but
I don't know if
it
they'll,
can be.
I agree that they probably should raise the age limit, but I don't know if they will. The one thing that we've had success in this country with in soccer is the women's game.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We have to continue to be the best in that.
You know that's how these things work a lot of times, so we'll see.
Fair enough.
All right, let's get to the last. We have just a few minutes left.
Number one.
The Chiefs are hoping the NFL will have a ruling on Tyreek Hill before the start of training camp, according to Therese Paylor of Yahoo Sports. He had an eight-hour meeting with NFL investigators on Wednesday that was considered quote-unquote positive for the receiver. The 25-year-old was under investigation for child abuse against his three-year-old son, but the investigation is no longer active and there is no arrest made. Many experts assume he will be suspended by the NFL, and the maximum he could receive is four games. Chris, how many games at this point is an appropriate suspension in your eyes?
Four games.
Okay.
I think that's fine. If they've looked into this, and I'm talking about
the police, yeah,
and they're not filing any charges, and they're satisfied, however it was that they became satisfied, then that, to me, the National Football League could do no more than the collective bargaining agreement says, and that's four games. Seems like it would be fair to me that that's the punishment. I think the Chiefs can still decide whether or not they want to keep Tyreek Hill as part of the program, and apparently they do. So they'll probably have to put up with a little backlash for that, but four games sounds right to me.
I think four games is right. I think Chris is dead on, especially considering that it seems like the police have closed their case. There's no longer an investigation. There's no charges filed. But because he's been in these incidents, I think it's appropriate to have four games. It's like, we want you to get the message that we need you to stay away from this type of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, this is probably as bad as it gets right here.
Pretty much.
I heard a national sports talk host say on the drive home last night that he thinks if Tyreek Hill can't play or if the Chiefs release him, the Chiefs are now going to be the worst team in the AFC West. Would you say
it's a little strong?
Yeah, that is strong, right? I was like, "What is going on with this take?"
Well, that's not a lot of support for how good Patrick Mahomes is. If they think they're going to take away his wide receiver, and he's not going to be able to ever move.
He doesn't have
ball.
Kareem Hunt either.
He didn't have him at the end of last year, and he was one possession away from going to the Super Bowl.
No? In my face, because that was a great retort. Is that the word? Retort? Rebuttal. Rebuttal is the word. All right, that's it for the Big Five.
You've survived another edition of
the looks on your guys' face sometimes.
You know why we have that look?
Because you have no idea what's going on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
As I said, we're getting ready to talk some football. And joining us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, Eric Williams of ESPN. Eric, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, fellas. How y'all doing?
Hi, Eric.
We're well. Thank you for coming on. A lot of buzz, obviously, surrounding the Chargers. And not necessarily on the field. It seems to be taking place off the field. Melvin Gordon has put his foot down. He is not showing up until he gets a new contract. Where are we at? Are they even close when it comes to terms?
In talking to people around negotiations, it doesn't sound like they're close right now. I think Melvin wants to be paid as one of the top backs in the league. You know, when you look at his numbers over the last couple of years, they certainly are up there amongst the top five. And the Chargers have a different value for him right now. So I think it's good that he kind of put it out there in terms of where he's at in negotiations and kind of taking a stand, you know, saying that he's willing to hold out because he wants to get top dollar based on where he's at in his career, 26 years old, and maybe this being his last bite at the apple in terms of getting the kind of contract that he deserves. Gives both his representation and the Chargers some time to work things out before training camp starts, but certainly he's willing to sit out if that's what it takes in order to get the contract that he wants.
Eric Williams is with us from ESPN talking a little Charger football, some NFL stuff a week ahead of training camps, and that's a great sign for NFL fans that it's getting to that part of the year, Eric. How do you think, just in your own opinion, this one's going to play out? Judging by the Chargers' background on these kinds of things and just the general consensus of how these things end up. Do you think he's going to get the money and stay in the chart? You think they're going to hold firm? What do you think is going to wind up here?
Well, Tom Telesco's philosophy since he's taken over as general manager of the team has been to draft, develop, and re-sign his top players. And they've done that with a lot of their core guys. You know, you look at Melvin Ingram and Corey Legit and other guys that have received high-dollar contracts to stay with the team. So I think, you know, Melvin Gordon's a guy that they moved up to get in the draft. Certainly they value him as a player and as a person. He's a hard worker. Teammates like him. He wants to stay with the Chargers. It's not like he wants to leave. So I think all those things line up. It's just a matter of getting a fair deal for both parties. So that might take a little bit longer. But I think that he ends up staying with the Chargers. Unless they're not able to kind of get to some kind of compromise, I think it's more likely that he's going to stay with his team. I think the other thing is what other teams out there need a back like Melvin Gordon are willing to pay the kind of money it would take to offer a trade. I don't know if there's necessarily a trade partner out there that you could move him to.
Eric, as we sit here and talk about the Chargers, you think back to last year, they had a terrific regular season. They got themselves a playoff win as a Los Angeles Charger organization. What did they do this offseason to help improve their chances of getting further along in these playoffs?
You know, that's a fair question. They didn't really do a whole lot on the surface when you look at it. I mean, obviously they drafted Jerry Tillery and Nasir Adderley, two guys that are going to help them on the defense side of the football. Jerry's a guy that can push the pocket, so he's going to be a three tech. You're going to see an obvious passing situation. And then Nasir is a guy that can play free safety and Earl Thomas type in that system, guy that can take the ball away, a guy that they didn't really have in their defense last year. Now you can really push Derwin James up to the line of scrimmage, which is where he's most effective and get the most out of, you know, the type of player he is. They made a couple moves in free agency. Thomas Davis, that they needed in the middle, a veteran presence that's, you know, getting up there in years, 36 years old, but they still can still be effective. And then they get Tyrod Taylor, backup quarterback, that can come in and basically insurance policy in case Philip gets hurt, although he never gets hurt. He's the most durable quarterback in the league.
Yeah.
I think where they really got better, though, and maybe people aren't looking at it, is the guys that they're getting back healthy. Having a healthy Hunter Henry on offense is huge because now you have a guy that worked the middle of the field. and he's a good run blocker as well, so you could run two tight end sets a little bit more. Joey Bosa for hopefully 16 games is going to help them. And their whole linebacking core was hurt during the playoffs. Denzel Perryman, Jatavis Brown, Kaiser White, all those guys were on IR, and because of that, that's why they played seven defensive backs in the playoffs. So getting all those guys back healthy, I think, is going to really help them in terms of their overall depth. You just have to keep them healthy so that they're ready to go if and when they make the playoffs again.
Eric Williams, nice enough to join us here on the SDCC Fan Hotline from ESPN, talking a little Charger football. You know, Eric, you've been around this team, I think, the franchise, since they've been in San Diego. And I'm just curious, following them up to L.A., how much is the hassle of them being in Los Angeles and not as accepted there as they'd like to be? How much does that transfer over to affecting this organization, and does it transfer all into the play that this team? I mean, I guess my question is there only a certain ceiling that the Chargers can reach without the full support of their community?
No, I don't think so. I think it serves as motivation.
Okay.
I think early on it affected them. You know, you look at that 0-4 start and you're showing up to your home games and there's, you know, that significant amount of opposing fans. It took them a while to kind of get used to that environment and the fact that there is going to be 40 to 45% opposing fans in the stadium. But I think once they kind of realize, okay, this is what it is, how can we use this to our advantage to motivate us? I just think they took kind of a different mindset and perspective, kind of an us against the world mentality. And you saw that last year, you know, going 9-0 on the road, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they lost the Patriots in the playoffs, but they kind of took that us against the world mentality ASAP, any squad, any place, something that Melvin Ingram created. I think it just helped kind of make them a tougher team, a team that could battle through adversity. And that's a dangerous team when you kind of have that mindset and everybody takes that on. So I don't think there's a ceiling in terms of how they can play. And I think actually they want to be at home in the playoffs. They don't want to go to New England or Baltimore, to those cold weather cities. They'd rather have teams come to their place where they know it's going to be 70 degrees and sunny, and they have to deal with that kind of environment.
Well, Eric, we certainly appreciate your time. I know during the season we'll probably be reaching out a lot more, especially if the Chargers are playing as well as they played last year. There were a lot of dormant fans that came out of nowhere once they started playing well. So
we did get a lot around here.
Eric, we appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you again.
Sure, no problem. Thanks, guys.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's now time for Gwen and Chris to rank their top five of the day.
Gonna grip and rip as usual.
But this isn't just a regular top five list.
I love it. It sounds sadistic, but I love it.
This is the countdown. And it starts right now on 97.3 The Fan.
Real quick before we get started, I'm just looking at the Dodgers box score tonight. They're in Philadelphia. Dodgers lead 6-1 in the fourth inning. And I'm thinking, all right, they must have hit 3-4 home runs because that's the Dodgers. None. And I would really like to see a Padre box score look like that one of these days.
This is why the Dodgers are so tough this year.
Yeah, six runs, no home runs. Yeah. One double. Everything else is just base hit, walk, base hit, base hit, base hit, base hit. Six runs are in. That's something the Padres can't and don't do yet. So we'll see.
Agreed.
They'll get there. They'll get there. Be patient, Chris. Be patient. I don't want to be. I love talking to myself. Let's go into the countdown.
Number five.
All right. Fifth. Let's see. What is the actual title?
The actual title is Top 5 Players That May Be Moved Before or At the Deadline.
Okay.
Want me to go first?
Yes. Let's see where you're going.
Number five for me is Shane Green, right-handed pitcher for the Tigers. Having a terrific season. All-star, 22 save.
Breakout year.
1.09 ERA in the first half. And listen, he was a former Yankee that had overpowering stuff, needed to change the scenery after the first year getting up there, and he's found it. He's been a ground ball machine, and I think he's going to be a terrific addition to really somebody who needs a setup man, but he can close if need be, but I think he'll be the number five guy on my list.
It's a good name. I think a lot of people don't know that name. The only reason I think some Padre fans know that name is because he and Kirby were the last two guys to blow a save this year.
Oh,
I don't
right.
even know if Shane Green's even blown one yet, but I know Kirby finally blew one and then got two over the weekend. That was tough, trying to get a six-out save, and he gave up the tying run, which was already on base. Anyway, my number five is Trevor Bauer, Cleveland. I think that is going to really be interesting to see what the Indians do. Are they really going to kind of give up on this season? They're right there. They're only a half game out of the wild card, but we keep hearing the name Trevor Bauer, Corey Kluber. The Indians maybe want to start all over again. I think what happens with Trevor Bauer could kick off a whole bunch of dominoes.
Number four.
Number four for me is a guy that I feel like I faced so often while we were coming up, and that's Will Smith, left-handed pitcher for the Giants.
Ah.
He was a starter with the Royals when I was facing him. He went to Milwaukee, became a reliever, but he's a terrific pitcher. He's always been one of the more heady guys that toes the rubber. The 34-year-old is 2-0 with a 2.17 ERA, 23 saves on a team that's actually rising right now in the Giants.
Yeah, the Giants may not be looking to make trades
right.
anymore.
He struck out 54 and only 37 in a third innings. He's in the final year of his contract. And listen, every 3 years since 2010, he's been traded. So it's about that time for him every third year since 2010. But I think Will Smith, left-handed on top of that, I think he'd be a terrific addition for a team that's, you know, planning on going, making a deep run into the playoffs.
Will Smith is in the one blown save club, along with Brad Hand, Felipe Vasquez of Pittsburgh. And Felipe Vasquez of Pittsburgh is my number four guy.
Good call.
Great reliever, has been for quite some time with the Pirates. A lot of people think he's going to wind up with the Dodgers. The Dodgers, don't they? They don't need anything particularly, but I think that is what they have to go get.
I think
you're somebody
right.
like Felipe Vasquez, a left-hander who can close, but also just lock down the eighth inning. I mean, last night, Baez gave up two home runs in the bottom of the eighth inning in Boston. He's not reliable. Nobody else truly is that reliable ahead of Kenley Jansen. So I think Vasquez is what the Dodgers target.
Number three.
Originally, at number three, I had a different guy, but he's come down with an injury recently. Zach Wheeler was my number three from the Mets, but I've had to remove him out of here, and I'm replacing him with Matthew Boyd, from the Tigers. We had a conversation about him. His name has popped up in Padre rumors as well. Left-handed strikeout guy, 28 years old. He's has 152 strikeouts in 114 innings. He's 6-7 with a 3.95 ERA. I faced this guy as well when he was with the Blue Jays before he was put in this deal to Detroit. A lot of talent. It's taken him a little bit of time to kind of figure things out, but I think a lot of people are thinking he's on his way up right now. He's starting to figure things out. Strikeout to walk ratio, he's doubled that from last year's 3.12 to a league leading 6.33 this year.
152 strikeouts, 24 walks. That gets my attention.
The best part about him is he's still under control for three more years. So he might, out of everybody that we're going to talk about, he might fetch the most in return because he's under control for another 3 years. That's what teams covet so much.
I like Matthew Boyd. In fact, I'd rather have him than my number three guy, Noah Syndergaard, who the Padres seem to really want desperately and have been trying to get for over a year. So I got to put him on my list. I'm really hoping that I open up you don't open up the paper anymore. I'm hoping I go online one night and I see that Syndergaard has been traded somewhere else so that the Padres don't have to give up a whole bunch of stuff to get him, because I'm not that big of a Syndergaard fan. But I think he's number three on the list. Interesting trade bait guy. Thomas?
Number two.
Thank you.
All right, number two for me is a guy that I've been on board of the Padres going after since the offseason, and that's Marcus Stroman, Blue Jays right-handed pitcher. He's having an all-star year as well. As a matter of fact, I think he posted something during the all-star break of how much love he got from other teams and other guys from other teams at the all-star game telling him how much they want to play with him. So clearly those conversations are had. I don't know if there's tampering in Major League Baseball.
Is Doc Rivers there telling him that he's comparable to Cy Young or something?
I think his energy would fit so well in this clubhouse. A young guy, a super positive guy, but he likes to compete. And he lets you know about it, too. Matter of fact, here's a little sound for Marcus Stroman. Here's a little sound for Marcus Stroman.
Oh, that was Marcus Stroman screaming?
That was Marcus Stroman saying, yeah! Could you imagine that at Petco Park after a strikeout hearing this?
I like the end. And he's pumped up about it. Yes, he is.
Dan Shulman. As you could tell. Thank you, Dan.
Marcus Stroman, number two.
He's 5-10, but 3.25 ERA with a really bad team.
Really bad team.
Toronto's pathetic. All right, my number two guy is Madison Bumgarner. Been waiting for him to be traded all year long. Now that the Giants are only a game behind the Padres, I don't know what San Francisco does all of a sudden. Isn't this interesting? I mean, Bruce Bochy might win another Manager of the Year award before this season's over if he keeps going like this with the Giants. But Bumgarner's the biggest name on the board and obviously has a World Series experience to change somebody's fortunes. Question now, where are the Giants at the end of this month in terms of wanting to trade him anymore? Because, man, they have gotten red hot.
Number one. My number one is Madison Bumgarner. Ah. Big left-hander. Allowed only one unearned run in his last start against the Brewers. He's making $12 million this year. And for that reason, he's in the final year of his contract, by the way. And for that reason, I could see the Giants just holding on to him. It's Bruce Bochy's last year. They've all of a sudden found themselves kind of in the race here. Only, as you said, only one game back from the Padres. And I don't think, honestly, that the Giants would get as much as they would want back in moving a contract like that. He's going to be off the books anyway next year, so it's not going to affect salaries moving forward. Although he's the number one guy on this list, I can totally see him staying for the rest of this year, letting, you know, Boch have at least some of the guys that he did all this damage with as far as World Series. But certainly Madison Bumgarner is going to be one of the most coveted people in the, coming up to this deadline.
I wonder what the Giants are thinking right now. God, I hope we lose tonight to the Rockies.
My guess is that they're really irritated right now.
That's what I was just going to say. Please.
We're not supposed to be doing this.
Yes, please lose tonight. We do not want to keep winning. We want to trade some of these guys.
That's how it was in 10 when I was here. It was like, what are you guys doing? You're going to make us trade people to get a player because we're actually in this?
Yeah. Giants may have to do it. All right, my number one is three guys that I do not want to see traded. Kirby Yates, Hunter Renfroe, and Franmil Reyes. Keep them right here in San Diego. You especially can't move Yates. Have you seen this bullpen lately? I would like to see Renfroe and Reyes with this ball club going forward. And I think any trade the Padres do or don't make has to be with 2020 in mind. And that's what I ask myself. Do I want both of these guys on my team next year? And the answer is yes. So I don't want to be dealing them, even though everybody keeps saying they're available. Stop making available. Hang up the phone, AJ. All right, there's our list of the top five.
The countdown is now closed.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, Scott Miller joins us now from Bleacher Report. Talk a little baseball, the sport that Michael Jordan tried to play without much success. How are you, Scott Miller?
Hey, Chris. Hey, Tony. Nice to be with you guys. All good. How about yourself?
Always fantastic. A pleasure to have you aboard on the SDCCU fan hotline. And, Scott, I'm not sure quite where to start because you're working like crazy. I mean, I looked up on Bleacher Report. There are like 9 stories on there. So I want to start with the umpires and the robots and the Atlantic League and what in the world they are trying to do to my game of baseball.
I know, right? Yeah, well, we've heard about these. First of all, the name robot umpires is probably, I mean, I'm not saying it's not controversial, but I think the name robot umpires is probably far more entertaining than it really is, because you hear robot umps, you're like, what, is there a robot, like, behind the plate, you know, behind the catcher? No, there are no robots. But, that's kind of what's been dubbed the electronic strike zone, and they're testing it this year in the Atlantic League. It was supposed to start in April, by the way, but they kept running into myriad delays in the, because everything has to be calibrated just right, and they finally got it going. They tested it in the Long Island Somerset game a couple weeks back, and then they had it in the All-Star game, the Atlantic League All-Star game. The Atlantic League has essentially become kind of a research and development league for MLB. You know, they're not doing the electronic strike zone or robot umps yet in any affiliated minor league. It's all the Atlantic League. And, obviously some people have some feelings on it.
Yeah,
clearly by some of the quotes you had in your article, it seems like a large majority of guys are against it. But you had a few guys, CC Sabathia being one, that felt like if they're getting the calls right, guys will get on board. Now, how much of this? You know, we talk about this electronic strike zone, and I think it was Corey Kluber who actually brought up the 12-6 breaking ball that clearly bounces before it gets to the catcher, but because it crosses a zone, it's a strike. How do you combat those type of things when if it even combats it at all?
Right, and I think, Tony, that's why they're doing so much testing of this, because they understand that there are some issues that they would need to address, and issues that would need to be solved, because if and when it comes to MLB, and look, if this runs smoothly and the test, it all passes with flying colors, you know, I think we could see it sooner than later. You know, three or 4 years. But again, if there are no kinks, and as we all know, because all you got to do is look at the current instant replay in Major League Baseball, and we all see there are some kinks with that still. But that's a big thing. Is a lot of the discussion came to, well, you know, okay, who's is going to benefit the hitter or the pitcher more? And a lot of the players I talked to think it's going to benefit the pitcher more. And as you mentioned, Tony, Corey Kluber spelled it out, and others agreed that there could be some funky things with the curveball, where the curveball clips the front edge of the electronic strike zone and registers as a strike, but then it bounces on the plate, and it's essentially an unhittable pitch. Now, interestingly enough, Corey Kluber, of all people, said, I like the human element. I do not want an electronic strike zone. You would think him, of all people, and some pitchers would be like, hey, man, if we're going to be able to get away with some curveballs here, we're all for it, but they're still mixed.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me as much, because the one thing I know about almost all pitchers is that one thing they enjoy is the competition between hitter, batter. And if they know they have a clear advantage, a lot of them would take advantage of it in the moment, but they would feel, they wouldn't feel that great about it going home. I mean, you are literally throwing a pitch that bounces before a guy could actually swing at it. Did you talk to GMs around the league, people in the actual, you know, top levels? Did they have any comments about this kind of stuff?
Mostly players. I don't think I talked to any GMs. I did talk to Terry Francona. It's kind of funny. His quote got cut out of the story. One of the editors said, you know, it's just you didn't have that much to say. But but anyway, Terry Francona, longtime manager, as you guys well know, Cleveland Indians now, formerly Boston Red Sox, a lifelong baseball guy. Terry Francona's point was, look, baseball does a really good job of testing things and staying in communication with us, meaning managers and general managers. He said, you can bet, kind of what I said a little bit earlier in our talk, he said, you can bet if, again, big if, it ever gets to the point where they want to institute the electronic strike zone here in our level, our game at our level. He said, if they get to that point, I'm confident it'll be fine. I'm not worried about it because they would have tested it so much before it ever gets to us.
All right. Well, I still don't buy it. I honestly would rather have Angel Hernandez back there than a...
That's a big statement.
See, I'm about to say, I think most of these players on this same article that are against electronic strike
are thinking about Angel Hernandez?
They probably would rather have the electronic strike zone. I'm just going on a limb there. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, Eric Hosmer's a guy that, as you said, CC Sabathia is definitely in favor of it. And, you know, I quoted Eric Hosmer in the story as well. I talked to him about it. And, yeah, he also says, look, if they can get it right, I think, you know, I'd love it. And there are some guys on that side of it, and including, you know, one guy I didn't talk to, but he said enough last summer, Ben Zobrist.
Oh, yeah, he definitely. He's been a big proponent of it for a while.
Yeah, remember, his first career ejection was last, like, July or August. And this is after, like, here's a model citizen.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had been playing, whatever it was, 12 years or so in the majors. Very first ejection last year, it was over balls and strikes. I can't remember who the plate umpire was at the point, but he said, this is why we want electronic strike zone. Boom, you're gone.
Yeah, well, good.
Yeah,
good.
I'm pretty sure those are the magic words right there.
Good for the umpire.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I don't know. Is there a point where baseball is going to get too far away from itself? Scott Miller is with us from Bleacher Report, one of the best baseball writers we have. You know, Scott, I was mentioning this last week. I think baseball spends a little bit too much time working on the game and telling everybody how bad it is and how boring it is and how long the game is and how they have to make it shorter and how they have to do this and how they have to do that. It's almost like they're telling everybody out there that their game is terrible. And I think a lot of people are kind of growing up with that attitude. I mean, this younger generation is like, well, yeah, I can't watch baseball. It's too long. It's not exciting enough. There's not balls not put in play enough. It seems like baseball's telling on itself in a lot of ways. Do you see where I'm going with that a little bit?
Well, yeah, I get it. And in a way, you know, I mean, I think there's some points to be made there, especially, you know, I mean, it's one thing to continue. Baseball's caught right now between trying to figure out, as Tony Clark said at the last week at the All-Star game, baseball's trying to figure out what it wants to be. And that's not a great position to be in if you don't have a clear vision for the future. And part of that, I think, is with some of this technology that's available. You know, on one hand, that's fine. I'm not a big exit velo guy. My ball go over the fence or not. If it did, it's a home run, and I don't need to know if it was 190 miles an hour or 20 miles an hour. Whatever, I get it. But you know what? Some people enjoy that, and that's fine. And I don't want to be. I mean, I'm not. I don't personally care much about exit velo, but a lot of people do, and that's fine. Where I'm going to your point, Chris, I think what worries me about some of this technology now that's in the game, I do think some of it has sucked the soul out of the game.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Case in point, replay. Like, I think instant replay, where it started with boundary, I think it should be boundary calls. You know, did the ball go over the fence or not? Did it land on the right or wrong side of the foul line down the line? I get the bang-bang plays at the bases. That's fine to a point. But the problem I have is where I say it sucks a lot of the soul out of the game. So we don't have – there are hardly ever any manager arguments with the umpires anymore. Yep. And that – I know, you know, that's almost, I guess, probably, I don't know, like lobbying for more fighting in hockey. Fans like all that stuff. But the manager arguments, I mean, you know, the classical clips, like Earl Weaver out there throwing his cap, you know, some like 5'6" guy with smoke coming from his ear, stomping on his cap, acting like a 10-year-old. Fans love it. I mean, TV, you're glued to it. It energizes ballparks. It energizes dugouts. And as we do more and more technology into the game, you have less and less of that human interaction. And as Jonathan Lucroy said in this electronic strike zone story, he said, you know, look, this is MLB real life. This isn't MLB the show, and right. I worry that we're getting closer to MLB the show.
Leave it to Jonathan to hit you with a quote like that. That's so perfect. It's so perfect.
I hope that was
him.
Before he was concussed.
Let me,
by the way,
listen. Now you talked to some umpires too, or you used to talk to the umpire spokesman, right, for this piece, right?
Yeah. The umpires union gave me a statement. As you would expect, I knocked on the door a couple of times to the umpires' room, actually at Petco Park, and walked in, talked to a few of them. They're always very receptive. They're good guys. I don't know them as well as I used to. That's where I missed the American and National League umpires.
Right.
I wish, you know,
I like
now,
that also.
Yeah, they come and they go. But anyway, they quickly, the times I went into the umpires' room, you know, they said, look, you know, they were very nice, but they said, basically, we're not allowed to talk about that. And the umpires union, you know, has basically issued a gag order. So I finally got a statement from the umpires union, which, yeah, was what you expect. You know, they said, look,
this
you
isn't
know,
this, you didn't get the same. You didn't get the statement from the same person running their Twitter, did you?
I wondered about that. Tony, when that Twitter fiasco came up a couple weeks ago, I was working on this story, and I had the statement of the umpires by then, and I thought, oh, my God.
It's the same person.
It's the same person. It's the lawyer for the umpires. You know, it's like, oh, they need to be relations or communications help there. But, you know, like they say, but you know what the interesting thing, too, is? The umpire's contract is up after this year. Quietly behind the scenes, baseball has to negotiate a new deal with the umpires this year. You know, we're always so aware of after 2021 is when the players and owners have to negotiate their new deal. But quietly this year is when the umpire's contract is up. Anyway, this electronic strike zone is not advanced enough to where I think it's going to affect the talks that much, but it's interesting, and it does add, I think, another layer of anxiety and tension to the talks.
I think it's so tough. I mean, it was crazy to me that in the Star game, Scott, they actually called for a replay, and the umpires went over and put the headsets on to review a call at first base in the second inning of an exhibition game. I mean, it's just, to me anyway, that's for baseball to worry about. Scott Miller is with us from Bleacher Report. Another piece, Scott, about some of these contracts that were signed by some of these young players that seem very team-friendly. Are we going to see more of that as we go along? Are the Padres going to try and get in on this with Fernando Tatis Jr.? you know, or is this something that just the Braves seem to be doing?
Well, yeah, the Braves, obviously, with Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies. And the Albies one that he signed early this spring in April, that's the one that, you know, kind of hit the button to turn this into a national conversation. Because a lot of people think Ozzie's, you know, 7-year, $35 million is like the worst deal ever. It's hard to say. I mean, I do think some agents and players now are gun-shy of free agency because of the last couple of years, and I do think some guys are looking to jump in and sign before they hit free agency. But, you know, it's hard to paint things with a broad brush. I mean, if you're a client of Scott Boras, you're not going to be afraid of free agency. It's going to be business as usual. From the team's perspective, look, you know, it's hard. It's called hardball, not just on the field. Right.
I mean, right.
There's a reason it's hardball. And, you know, the teams try to get the best deals they can, and the players try to get the best deals they can. And, you know, usually it works somewhere in the middle. Oftentimes, you know, a player gets a huge advantage. Other times the teams get a huge advantage. And, But it's interesting because salaries are public, and you know, and I mean, if people knew, Chris, what you're making, or Tony, what you're making, or what I'm making, if that became not even nationally, but if that became a conversation around San Diego, it'd probably be a little uncomfortable for us. I know, Tony, when you were a player, you were in that predicament where everybody knows what all the players are making.
Right.
It's such a private thing, and I just, you know, I mean, it's easy to knock Ozzie Albies. Like, how could you sign that deal? But on the other hand, it's $35 million. He broke his elbow 2 years ago, and he said he told me he was afraid for his career. And
there
he
you
figured,
go.
You know, I'm grabbing some security, man.
I thought, Scott, that's what you highlighted the best in that entire article. It really opened it up so you saw both sides. Like, Ozzie Albies, it wasn't as simple as they offered him $35 million. He was like, that's a lot of money, I'm going to sign it. There's so many other things that played into it. His father passed away early. He's been the main supporter since then. Yeah. Broke his elbow just randomly. It wasn't something that, you know, was he expecting. And I thought Gerard Dyson hit it on the head, right? We can all sit back here and talk about how bad of a contract it was. And that may be true, but for each individual, and my dad used to tell me this all the time, because he was a guy who got phone calls from the union often when he signed his deals.
Taking those deals.
And it's to each his own. You don't know what's going on in somebody's background, how all of that affects not just the player in his contract, but the people who are attached to him. And I thought you did a terrific job highlighting that.
I appreciate you saying that. And I just think, Tony, as in many things in life, we try to break things down into black and white.
Right.
It's the problem or whatever the subject is. It's rarely that simple. There are layers and layers and layers of gray. And, you know, I mean, it's easy, you know, especially for the media. I mean, some of my brethren in the media were just killing Ozzie Albies. And I get it. You know, your hot takes are sexy. And, you know, it's important to have, you know, it's cool to have a hard-hitting opinion, and I get that. But, you know, sometimes you need to me, take a step or two back and look at the entire landscape. And some things pop up that maybe you don't think of in the first 2 hours after news is made.
I can admit I was one of the people that was I was blown away by the deal that he took. But on the other hand, I recognize that I don't know what he's going through in his private life. And it's two trains of thought, right? You got the Scott Boras side that's, hey, maximize your value. Because the truth is, both sides, right? It takes both sides to make the deal. And I felt like the one thing you hit on that was impactful was the fact that, and a couple of the players mentioned it, the fact the organizations are taking advantage of that, right? They know the backstory. They know a lot of this stuff.
Right.
So they take advantage. So that's kind of shame on them from that standpoint. But ultimately, the guy has to sign the piece of paper in order for it to go through.
Right. That's, I know, my wife would tell me to sign that one.
100%. My wife would.
What'd they say, 5 years, 35? Yes, you're signing now.
That's
now.
Right.
Immediately.
Yes, in permanent ink, not in number two.
No, no questions.
Right, Tony, Drew Dyson, you know, he's a terrific guy.
Yeah.
He's got a great way of expressing himself. He kind of has his own unique language almost, you know, some in the way he uses some words here and there. And he's got some good opinions, and he's smart. And, yeah, to your point about the clubs will take advantage, but the players also, you know, have, you know, it takes two to make a deal. And Dyson, you know, he brought up the point that I know is, you know, no organization would ever admit to, and you know, it's uncomfortable for them. But, you know, Dyson said, look, I come from basically a dirt poor area in Mississippi, and he brought up some of the Latin players. And, you know, one of his points, too, was, you know, he brought up that uncomfortable subject of some clubs are going to take advantage of even the Latin players or players where they know about their background
because
they think they can get them to sign for cheap because they came from such a poor area. So, again, just one more layer to this entire subject.
Scott Miller just isn't enough to write about in the game of baseball. Scott, thanks so much for all your time, as always, and we'll catch up to you. See you at the ballpark soon.
Right back at both of you guys. Definitely see you soon. And thanks. Appreciate the kind words.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.